My name is John Friedewald, and I'm a transplant nephrologist at Northwestern University in Chicago. And I'm going to talk today about how to handle marginal donors and which kidneys to use for which patients. So the title is Marginal Donors, Who Should Receive These Kidneys? But really what this boils down to is how do we give the right kidney to the right recipient, and I'll add, at the right time. Because I think ultimately what we're looking to do is have a good outcome for our patients, for our centers, and that requires a complex interplay of donor and recipient factors, which I'm going to review with you during this talk. So if you look at the big equation here, we have a donor, we have a recipient, and that produces an outcome. And I think one of the mistakes we make is we rely too heavily on certain metrics which don't take this all into consideration. For instance, we can focus heavily on the kidney donor profile index, or KDPI as I will refer to it. And that portends the risk of graft failure at 1 year or 2 years. But clearly that's not the only important thing, because there's a variety of different recipient factors which can interplay with that kidney donor risk profile to produce different outcomes. So just to focus singly on one number, which is easy to do, may mislead us in terms of the risk we're taking for our patients and the risk we're taking for our centers. So I'm going to review what goes into donor factors, and I'm going to focus primarily on high KDPI kidneys. We could go through a lot of other potential types of donors, and if you think about high infectious risk donors, PHS increased risk donors as they're called, a lot of those factors don't influence the quality of the kidney. They may influence the risk of infection and other things like that, but primarily what we're thinking about now is kidney quality, recipient risk, and how that produces a certain outcome, and how we get judged on those outcomes and how that may affect the viability of our center. So if we focus on the high KDPI donors here, I like to say, of course, that's just a number, and that is a population estimate of risk of graft failure based on some known factors. But there are some important factors that are not in the KDPI. So for instance, biopsy results. And of course, kidney biopsies for donors is a very hot topic and hotly debated. There's also pump characteristics. If you choose to pump a kidney, you can look at things like the flow and resistance that may help you. So personally, what I like to do is use a biopsy to either confirm a good story or a bad story. So an example is a high KDPI donor. If the biopsy looks quite good, I can use that as a way to convince our team and or convince a patient that this may be a good kidney for them, because a lot of people do get spooked by the number, and we try to avoid that. So a biopsy could be a way to confirm a good story or rule in a kidney. And that's why I like to use biopsies, to rule in rather than to rule out a potential kidney offer. Pumping a kidney can do a couple of things. Number one is it can be diagnostic. So you can see that, you know, again, confirming a bad story. If you have a patient who you were concerned about a high burden of cardiovascular disease, for instance, if they were a smoker and had diabetes and high blood pressure and maybe had some abnormal kidney function that you can't confirm was ever normal or not if you don't have a history, sometimes poor pump characteristics, if done properly, can help you confirm a bad story and alert you to higher risk for a donor. I don't use pump characteristics alone ever to rule in or out a donor, but I will use them to augment what we already know and provide more information. But also importantly, don't overlook the therapeutic value of pumping kidneys. We know that pumping a kidney can reduce the risk of delayed graft function, and that's particularly important as we think about which recipient is going to receive this kidney. So I'm a big fan of pumping. I realize there are cost considerations there, and it's not done uniformly. And I think as a community, it would be help us to move towards more frequent pumping of kidneys, both for the diagnostic and therapeutic benefit. So when we think about high KDPI kidneys, you know, what is the risk and what do we know about them? There's been a fair amount of work done studying how does the KDPI affect the risk to a patient. And that's been shown a number of times. And this figure here, which is a sort of a rough drawing, explains that risk. And many of us are familiar with this setup of how this is drawn. But this dotted line here is the risk of staying on dialysis, which is a relative risk of 1. And then the risk of a transplant with the varying degrees of KDPI donor kidneys is shown here. So for instance, if you take a kidney from a donor with a KDPI score of 70 to 80%, this shows your risk of death going forward in time. So this is time here. This is 1 year. And what you can see is there's a perioperative risk of death that we all know because you have to go through surgery and start immunosuppression and go through all the risk of that. And so there's a higher risk of dying compared to being on dialysis early on. But the question is, where does that cross the line here, the one line, and become a lower risk? So for a 70 to 80 KDPI donor, that happens sometime just about between 9 and 12 months. So if you can make it those first 9 or 12 months and survive, then your risk of dying goes down compared to being on dialysis. That's the key, and that really helps us when we decide which recipient is right for this kidney. The good news is the same is true for the higher KDPI kidneys, both the 80 to 90 and the 90 to 100% KDPI kidneys. They both cross this line. Now, the trick is it takes longer for both of those to do that. They cross at some point closer to a year and a half after the transplant, and for the 90 to 100s, almost out to 2 years. So those are the ones where you have to really choose your recipients carefully. And again, we like to think about just the number, the KDPI number, sort of telling the whole story, but it really is careful recipient selection for those kidneys that can make all the difference in terms of a good outcome. One of the things to mention on the donor side is, you know, the idea of when we choose which recipient, thinking about things like speed versus quality. Which of your candidates are willing to trade quality of a kidney for getting transplanted faster? And I think we're moving to an era of alternative allocation pathways. There's interest in UNOS at looking at ways to have expedited placement of hard-to-place kidneys, and that often means getting it to a patient that's willing to trade the risk of a higher risk of a bad outcome for getting transplanted sooner and avoiding dialysis exposure, which we know is the primary risk of death in our patients, is how much dialysis they're on. And so that's another important thing to think about, and each center will do this differently, but we have a number of targeted lists within our list for varying degrees of kidney quality, for patients that are pre-consented, that know ahead of time that they're willing, and that's an important conversation to have at listing and while they're on the wait list, to understand what a patient's goals are. Some patients want to be on as little dialysis as possible and are willing to take the risk of a higher risk organ and the higher risk of delayed graft function or even primary non-function to trade off that dialysis exposure. But those are important conversations to have, not in the middle of the night when you have an organ offer, but to have well ahead of time so you know who those patients are and what risk they're willing to take based on their own values. And that's important. That's a shared decision making that we need to have with our patients more often. Let's move on to the recipient. So we have a donor. We know a little bit about the donor quality. We've looked at the KDPI score, but we've gone beyond that. We maybe looked at a biopsy. We maybe looked at pump characteristics to get a better sense of what the real risk is of delayed graft function and also of graft survival. So then we look at our candidates. And when we look at candidates, there are a number of things we have to think about. What's the risk of this candidate? And that's a hard thing to answer. When we talk about outcomes and how we're measured, we're going to talk about risk adjustment. But we need to do that internally in our heads as we think about who's the best person to put a higher risk kidney into. So there's measured and unmeasured risk, and that's really important for you and your program to understand what is accounted for and what isn't. Because there are some important factors that aren't always weighed into the risk adjustment when we talk about how we're graded on our outcomes that can influence your decision-making about which patient to choose. So, for instance, cardiovascular disease. We have an enormous cardiovascular burden of disease in our patients on dialysis and with chronic kidney disease that is really not well accounted for when we think about risk adjustment. Why? It's complicated, and that's the easy answer, is that it's hard to quantify cardiovascular risk. There are a number of ways to do that. And when we think about what we measure and how we risk adjust, we want it to be objective, quantifiable, and that often can be difficult to decide, well, is a one-vessel CABG better than a 2 percutaneous coronary interventions, for instance? How do you quantify that and make it objective? And so that is being worked on, but currently cardiovascular risk is not well accounted for when we think about which patients we select. Obesity is somewhat accounted for, but this was one that I think is a significant factor, particularly in our older and frail patients. Frailty, hard to measure. I think all of us at our transplant centers becoming more comfortable with things like timed up and go testing, the Montreal Cognitive Assessment, or the MoCA, grip strength. So we now, as some of our extra vital signs, will think about what the frailty risk is of a patient. That is not well accounted for other than age, which is a surrogate for this, but we know that there are young patients who can be quite frail and older patients who are less frail. And so assessing the frailty of a patient both at the time of listing and at the time of an offer is very important to know what their risk is, particularly when we have a high risk of delayed graft function. When you take a donor kidney that's higher risk and put it into a higher risk situation, and that includes longer cold ischemic times and a frail older patient, that risk of delayed graft function gets magnified, and that leads to a lot of short-term considerations such as cost for your center, longer hospital stays, morbidity and mortality for the patient, all important outcomes. Other things to think about when you're picking a recipient for a high-risk kidney is, what is their socioeconomic factors? Not well risk-adjusted for, but very important. What is their support network? Can they make it to appointments? Do they have transportation? How far are they, or away are they from your transplant center? Are they good with their medication adherence? We use surrogates for this in terms of dialysis adherence. We can ask the dialysis teams how well they take their medications. Is their phosphorus controlled, anemia? But those are surrogates for really how well can this person adhere to the regimen that's going to be so important for their success. And then there are other multiplied risk interactions, which are even harder to quantify, I think, but they're really important. And with practice, you get to sort of see some of these things come out. So, for instance, the interaction between age, which is, of course, a physiologic age is more important, but age as a surrogate is a risk factor. But when you combine age with diabetes and obesity and cardiovascular disease, and remember, cardiovascular disease can be a number of things. We think about coronary artery disease and the risk of myocardial infarction, but in fact, things like arrhythmias, particularly atrial fibrillation, congestive heart failure, and pulmonary hypertension are big deals. And remember that arrhythmias often come with anticoagulation, which further complicates the perioperative management of sick, older patients getting a high-risk kidney. So when you put all these factors together, those are things you want to think about. Can you limit that risk as much as possible? Maybe you shouldn't take on all of these things at once. Maybe one or two of them in addition to a high-risk kidney is okay, but taking a high-risk kidney for someone who has a number of these risk factors can push that equation to a bad outcome, and that's what we want to try to avoid. Other things we think about, dialysis exposure, interacting with these other factors. And dialysis exposure, remember, leads to peripheral vascular disease. And we think about claudication as a sign of that, but in fact, the challenge of doing surgery in patients with bad blood vessels is a significant one. And so think about how that dialysis exposure interacts with targets for anastomosis and peripheral vascular disease. And again, we talked about really avoiding delayed graft function, because we know that delayed graft function can have longer-term effects, but really it's those short-term effects that play in here. Which of our patients are going to survive those first 9 months, 12 months to get through, to get the benefit of the transplant? That has a big interplay there. That initial hospitalization and the period afterwards where they may be fluid overload, maybe have a higher risk of a cardiac decompensation, those are all interplay factors you need to think about when trying to pair the right donor with the right recipient. Now, moving on to outcomes. So, we have a number of things we're trying to solve to. Number one is the patient. That's the most important part of this equation. We want them to have a good outcome. So they're looking for not just a short-term outcome, they want long-term success. And so, that definition of long-term success is different for every patient. For a 75-year-old, that may be 3 to 5 years off of dialysis to be able to do what they want to do. For a younger patient, obviously, that's a different story. But when we're talking about high-risk kidneys and high-risk recipients, oftentimes we're talking about a shorter horizon. So thinking about that is important. But obviously taking their wishes and needs into consideration should happen up front so that you can get the right outcome in this equation. Number two is the center outcomes. And, we get graded on, and it's important to know this, one-year outcomes. That's what we're currently measured by. Now, eventually we may move to three-year outcomes, and that's an important consideration. But for now, one-year patient and graft survival is our primary outcome metric. And so, if you want your center to be viable, if you want to be competitive, if you want to compete for insurance contracts, you need to make sure that your one-year patient and graft survival is adequate. How do we decide what's adequate? Well, there are two main groups that do this. Number one is the OPTN and UNOS, and that's the Membership and Professional Standards Committee, or MPSC. And number two are the insurance companies. CMS is the primary one, but private insurance contracts also are very important for the viability of your center. And they evaluate sort of the same way, but slightly differently. So how are we measured? Well, the main thing we look at is the number of observed events. Remember, one-year patient and graft survival are the key metrics. So how many observed actual patient deaths in 1 year of transplant, and how many grafts are lost within 1 year of transplant? That's what's counted up over a period of about 2.5 years, and that's what's measured, those number of observed events. Now, that's fine, but obviously that number is going to be different based on how many transplants you do, and of course, that number may also be affected by how risky the patients are that you transplant and the donors you choose. So that is then risk-adjusted to give us the expected number of events, and that's key. Understanding that and how that's derived has so much to do with the viability of your center. So know what goes into the risk adjustment. I didn't have enough whiteboard space to go through all the factors, but some of them I mentioned here. These are some of the factors that are not well measured. There are factors that are measured: diabetes, age, time on dialysis, etc. But know those things, because it's important to know what may not be measured. And again, for each individual patient combination, you want to know, am I taking on too much unmeasured risk? Because at the end of the day, you want your expected number of events to be high, and that's based on how much risk you take in terms of patient selection. So know it goes into your risk adjustment. And lastly, there have been some recent attempts to loosen that misaligned incentive. So again, your observed and expected events are weighted against each other. And obviously, if you have too many observed events compared to what's expected, that's when your center may be flagged for further review, both by the MPSC and or by CMS. Now, the implications of those flaggings are slightly different. MPSC is really focused on a quality improvement process. So centers that get flagged, the MPSC will come in, work with them to try to improve and improve their center, improve their outcomes. The ramifications of flagging by CMS can be much more significant, including losing reimbursement for your transplants from CMS, which really effectively can close your program. And so the way this is designed is that we actually want MPSC to flag more programs for review than CMS. We'd rather work with programs on quality improvement and avoid a CMS flagging, which has much bigger implications for you and your patients. And we always say we want to serve our patients best, but we can't do that if our center is closed. So you have to think about the viability of your center in terms of its outcomes and keep an eye on that while always trying to have the best outcomes for your patients. So again, what are the how did the risk adjustment work? A bigger scope for a different topic, but that observed to expected ratio, so having the observed events to expected events is sort of how it's basically done. And there have been a couple recent attempts to loosen misaligned incentives and regulation. I think we all want better outcomes, but we realize we have to take some risk. And expanding transplant and giving access to more patients often involves taking on more risk, and we want to not be penalized for that in the wrong ways. And so there are a couple things recently that have helped that. So number one is that CMS flagging criteria, one of the things is the observed over expected ratio. And it used to be if that ratio was higher than 1.5, that would be a potential flag. About 2 years ago, CMS loosened that up a little bit and said, okay, we'll increase that to 1.85. Not an earth-shattering change, but certainly a move in the right direction that has led to less programs being flagged, which again is good for centers. Also, the MPSC has developed a new operation rule that says that if your program is flagged for outcomes, either on patient or graft survival or both, you can be flagged on potentially all ways. What the MPSC now does is they'll say, okay, if you were flagged on all your transplants, we're going to remove the high-risk transplants. We're going to remove the transplants done from donors, kidney donors with a KDPI score more than over 85, and also recipients with an estimated post-transplant survival score, EPTS score, more than 80. That essentially identifies high-risk donors and high-risk recipients. And what happens is those transplants are removed and the process is rerun, you're observed, expected, and then if you flag again, then you're flagged. And what this has done also has led to fewer programs being flagged. Since this operational rule went into effect, we've seen fewer programs flagged for their outcomes, which is the intention. Flagging a program can have a lot of adverse events, particularly dropping in volume, changing in protocols, and reducing access in transplant for our patients, and that's not what's intended. We know that through all of this, outcomes are so much better for transplant than they are in staying on dialysis. We don't want to limit access to transplantation. We want it to be good. We want high quality, but we don't want to have misaligned incentives. And so some of these changes recently have been an attempt to loosen those misaligned incentives and make sure that transplant programs are able to innovate and give access to care for their patients. So I hope I've gone over a little bit about how to think about, on a big sense, when you have a donor, particularly a high-risk donor, how to choose the right recipient and to know what goes into your outcomes. Because I think at the end of the day, we want that for our patients and we want to make sure our centers are viable and healthy.